Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Thought it was amazing that you guys were able to still do it just on the phone. And so keep doing it. You're continuing to bring me smiles.
I'll tell you this. I'm in my attic, which is, if the camera widened out, you'd see what a dump it is. My wife is doing my makeup. My beard is, I'm going to get like Letterman. I now look, Brian, like something that crawled out of Oberman's couch. And I should not be on television.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
Or as Howard Cosell once said, he's unsightly. And he said it about me. I remember that pretty well. The coronavirus can do a lot of terrible things, obviously. But one thing it doesn't do that's terrible is it apparently is not attacking tulips. Tulips in Washington, D.C. are out everywhere. You walk around a neighborhood and people have tulips. Very, very, very lovely. Makes me happy. This is starting today, is traditionally the greatest week in sports. The NHL and the NBA have their playoffs basically set. They may have finished the season by now. They haven't started the playoffs, or they're in the last couple of games. But everything is set, and you know what's going to happen. Baseball has started, bringing energy to a tremendous amount of people who love baseball. Tonight, Monday night, this is the final game in the NCAAs. And then on Thursday, the Masters starts. And it's, in effect, the beginning of spring all around the country. It's the single greatest week in sports, and we have none of it. We have absolutely none of it. As somebody who's a sports writer my whole life, whether or not I'm on television or podcast, I'm a sports writer. I have the clock of a sports writer, and I just don't know what to do. David Aldridge is with us. David is younger than I, but David has the clock of a sports writer his entire life. This is the best week. What are you going to do?
I guess we're all going to sit in the attic, Tony, like I am, sitting in my attic. It's not what I want, not what any of us want, but the alternative is not pleasant. So we have to do this and think about it, Tony. I mean, really, what are they asking you to do? Sit at home and watch TV. Come on. That's not the biggest hardship in the history of time. It's sad that people don't get their sports. I know that sports isn't brain surgery, but it does matter to people. It's important to people. And especially now, it's important to people because they want something else to think about for an hour or two. And I think for everybody's mental health, it would be nice to have some sports back. But, you know, you can't always get what you want. Some band said that. I can't remember.
Rolling Stones, baby. Ooh, the Rolling Stones. Yeah. Your new favorite band. Yeah.
Not familiar with them.
Yeah. Can you work?
Oh yeah, we're working. We're working. We're trying very hard to do different things. We try to engage the readers with some types of, you know, it's a lot of lists and things like that, and jersey numbers, every city's most important jersey numbers, Mount Rushmore's, things like that. We're trying to do things with players. I did an interview with CJ McCollum last week from the Trailblazers about what he's doing to try and stay in shape, and the different things that he's doing now that they don't have the routine. You just mentioned the calendar, and you know this. I mean, athletes are creatures of schedule. They are told what to do, where to be, and they show up. You know, they show up to work out. They show up to play. They show up to do an event with fans. They show up to catch the plane. You know, I mean, so they must be going nuts with no schedule. You know, it's really – it's all on them. And then they have to spend time with their families, which, you know, most of them like, I think, in the abstract. But when it's – every day, like most of us, you kind of go, when are we going to San Diego again? You know, so it's a challenge for them.
It's a very different world. I remember when Gary Williams stopped coaching at Maryland, and Gary had for, I don't know, David, 40 years, maybe more, starting as a player. He had the same sort of November, December, January, February, March, every year, and he was lost. Yeah. He was lost. And I under, you know, of course you understand that because you have the athletes have this, the internal body clock that says, and now it's time that I do this. And then that doesn't exist anymore. Yeah. The work that you do, the work that the athletic does, I assume it's all on the phone. Although I guess if you were a beat writer, this would be driving you crazy.
I said, oh, sure. And it's telling, Tony, that a lot of our younger writers, you know, they're not really familiar with the idea of working the phones, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's such a foreign concept to them. Like, what do you mean they get on the phone and start calling people? How do I do that? You know what I mean? So you have to kind of walk them through it. This is what you have to do. You know, in our day, we had, we had Rolodexes and phone in our phone books, and we looked, you know, went through them and called people's numbers, asked them stuff. That's what you got to do now. You can't just depend on showing up in front of people and being able to do the work in kind of a scrum like most people do now. And, you know, we're trying to get people to see that there's a different way of doing it. There's another way of doing it that that can be effective.
McCollum's a bright kid. He went to Lehigh. I've been impressed with him when I've seen him talk. Is he, I don't know if you got to this, is he optimistic or pessimistic about when this renews again so that there's sports?
Well, I mean, I think we talked a little bit about it because he's on the executive committee of the Players Union. He's one of the vice presidents, so we did talk about it a little bit. And, you know, everybody's got all these ideas, Tony, but the calendar is the calendar, you know, and at some point you don't have enough days, you know, and we're rapidly getting to that point with you know, all the winter sports, whether it's the NBA or hockey or, you know, any of the other ones. You can't be playing this year's schedule in October. You know what I mean? Like, you have to go on to the next season at some point.
Right. That's right.
So that's the dilemma for all the sports leagues, all the winter sports leagues, is do we have enough days to get in a representative playoff? I don't think you have to do any – I don't think you have to have any more regular season games. I mean, the NBA played 65. I'm not quite sure how many hockey played, but I would imagine hockey was even further in its schedule than the NBA was. So I don't think you even have to go back to have any type of regular season. This is like a lockout year to me. I mean, you know, they've had lockout years with 66 games, with 70 games, and they had representative champions. As long as your playoffs are you know, realistic, you know, and have a good number of games. But you have to have a certain number of days to accomplish that playoff. And, you know, I think it's 2 months. Maybe they can do it in less than 2 months. Maybe you make the first round shorter. I've advocated going back to the miniseries this year. You remember that back in the
80s.
2 out of 3 in the first round.
Yeah.
Not because of anything other than you need to gain a week somewhere in the schedule, you know. And so the dates, you know, if we get back to the point where people can go back into arenas, the days are difficult in the summer because that's when all the other things are scheduled, you know, that can't be played during the NBA and NHL regular seasons when in many arenas, you know, teams share an arena and they're every other night. It's a basketball game. It's a hockey game. It's a college basketball game, you know. And so the things that, you know, you have concerts in the summer. So those days are there too, and they want to have their events as well. So you just don't have a whole lot of days to get this accomplished.
There are so many people who sit around and officially sit around. The leagues want them to sit around. And they sort of plan out what we could do if we had this many days or that many days. And would we isolate everybody? Would we put everybody in hotels in Las Vegas? And it goes on and on and on and on.
Yeah.
But the clock keeps ticking.
Right.
And you know, there does come a point where you say to yourself, you know what, the season's done. It's done. And we're going to move on to the next one. Because you just... You know, that there's a realism to what is going on that intrudes on these various scenarios, all of which are well-intentioned and all of which are indeed commissioned by the leagues. Of course they are, right?
Right. Exactly. And, you know, again, you know, nobody talks about, okay, what happens if you start up again and you have a second wave?
That's it. It's over. You shut down.
You know, what are you going to have a team with four players play a game? Come on, you can't do that. You know what I mean? Yeah. So that's the dilemma is that as Fauci said, you know, the virus sets the calendar, not you. You know, the
virus That's right.
tells you when it's over. You know, so until until we have that, I don't know how you can possibly plan with any type of confidence that you're going to actually be able to accomplish it.
No, I totally agree. So you have teenage kids at home. You have high school students at home. Have they tied you up and put you in your attic? I mean, are you with them all the time, or do you ever say, all right, get out of here, leave me alone?
No, I mean, actually, it's worked. It's been this way for a while. You know, one of the first things that I wanted to do when we moved into this house was finish this attic. It was a nice space, and it was unfinished. So,
do you do that yourself? Are you a do-it-yourself person?
Oh, no, no.
Okay. Because I'm not.
No, we had to, you know, renovate it and had people come in, and I gave them a lot of my money. And so, no, and so I have worked up here for a while. I had an office in one of the rooms that now is our younger son's bedroom. So, you know, I had to have somewhere where I could work. So I worked up here. And when I was with Cerner, they had a, you know, they had put a TV camera up here, so that we could do live shots from up here.
Right.
So I'm just kind of used to working up here. So it's worked out well. And the kids are downstairs on their computers doing their remote learning, I guess is what they're calling it, what the schools are trying to do. And so far, so good. And my, you know, Diane works downstairs as well. So it's worked out okay. This weekend was, it was the first weekend. They've been home for 3 weeks. And really, every day, the first 3 weeks has been fine. But this weekend was one of the first times I was really like, I love you guys, but
yeah. No, I'm weekends. I mean, for me, weekends are harder because I don't have something to do.
Right.
You know, it's just I just don't have anything to do. I do the podcast in the dining room. I do the television in the attic. I said to my accountant last week, "You better write this stuff off next year," because I'm just you know, I'm here doing all this stuff.
Now,
so,
is the club closed? Is there nothing to do?
And has been for almost a month. Yeah,
right,
there's just, there's nothing. There's really sort of nothing. And, you know, I walk out, I walk in the streets. I've been, I have a mask, but I have to say that when I've used it outside, when I've used it, to be honest, it makes me lightheaded. I'm not. You know, I'm not good with it, but I do stay, I really do stay away from others. I'm out with the dog most of the time and just walk around other people. And they walk around us.
This is natural for you. You don't like people, so this is good.
Well, there you go. So it works out. It works out. The only thing that would be better is if I had the ability, as people drove up and down my street, to just stop them randomly and kick them off the street. That would make me really happy.
That would be outstanding. It can't, and it's hard to do with civilian, with people walking, right? I mean, it's
no, they're,
when they're driving.
The only thing that has disturbed me about the walkers is the younger ones, of course, on bicycles want to get as close to you as they can, and you just want, hey, back up, will you? You know, get away from me. I'm actually trying to get away from you because you're the one carrying this thing. Get out of here.
Exactly.
So, anyway.
Exactly.
All right, you sound good. I'll talk to you soon. Thank you, David.
Tony, my pleasure. Stay healthy. Stay safe.
You too, David Aldridge, boys and girls. We will take a break. We'll come back with Wilbon. Wilbon's out in Arizona. There are now 9 states that don't tell you that you have to stay at home all the time.
Right.
And Arizona is no longer one of them. I mean, South Carolina still gives you the ability to walk around. Arizona, not so much. So we'll talk to Wilbon when we return. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Policy Genius ad. There are things that we look back on and we think, how did I get it so wrong? It might be wearing multiple polo shirts and popping all the collars. I never really did that. Or dating that one person that one time. You know that one. I don't know. We're always going to get things wrong. That's just life. But there are also things we can get right on the first try, like shopping for home insurance. And that's where Policy Genius comes in. Head to policygenius.com, answer a few quick questions about yourself and your property. Then Policy Genius will compare your policy against options from top insurers to make sure you're getting the right home insurance coverage at the best possible price. They save their customers an average of $690 per year just doing that. If Policy Genius finds you a better rate than what you're currently paying, they will do all the work to get you switched. Do you own a car as well? Policy Genius will compare your home and auto policies across different insurers and even mix and match to find you savings. That's good. That sounds good. So even if you look back on your triple denim days in distress, you'll never be distressed about home insurance with Policy Genius. In just a few minutes, you can find your best price and apply at policygenius.com. We all get things wrong from time to time. At least we can get home insurance right with Policy Genius.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
What you gonna do? Hey, what you gonna do? What you gonna do till the quarantine is through?
Dan Byrne, who always makes us happy. Dan Byrne dropped a couple of albums, he said last week. One about baseball called Rivalry. And you played some songs from that. And the other album is called Quarantine Me. And I'm pretty sure you know what that one is about. This is Till the Quarantine is Through. He's very wonderful, Dan Byrne.
He really is.
So happy he's on the show. Story songs, like him very much. Michael Wilbon joins us now. There are 9 states in America, as I said earlier, that allow you freedom to do what you want to do. And I don't think Arizona is in them anymore. South Carolina still is. Iowa still is. I don't think Arizona is. Are you in shutdown or no?
Well, there's something in between. It's not the shutdown that I'm hearing about other places having. I know it's not the shutdown that, say, Illinois has or Maryland or Virginia, but it's you know, it's not full freedom, but a lot of things that people, oh, my God, why haven't they this? And things are directed to Arizona. So we're sort of in the middle of that, though.
Your supermarkets are good? There's food everywhere?
Yeah. Well, I don't like everywhere. I'm not the super guy in this house, but I did go to, you know, Target one evening for something. I can't remember what it was. And I was stunned at 7 p.m. It was empty in terms of people. That didn't happen, say, in the big markets. Well, this is a big market. It's the biggest. That doesn't happen in cities. In cities where you have density and you have a Target, you don't have empty. Because I know, just because I talk to people and I'm wondering what it's like where they are. And, you know, I got family members, God knows, everywhere. And I was texting with the ones in Atlanta last night, just for instance. And they were like, what are you talking about? I said, yeah, we don't have that. And, you know, density is a huge part of this, and sort of being caught in it or the ability to avoid it. And I'm in a place with just no density whatsoever.
Yeah, yeah.
Scottsdale, Arizona. So I remember, you know, talking to my friend, Dr. Eddie Cornwell, more than 3 weeks ago. And he said, density is the enemy. Trust me on this. And I called him back one day and just, you nailed this. Because he was one of the people I called Tony and said, where should I ride this out? And he said, you still got a place in Arizona? Go there, because you don't want to ride it out here. And that, again, that's at the beginning of this. And it was just like, and now every day, you know, I'm watching reports, I'm watching this, I'm watching that. I think of that. So I'm not going to say the grocery stores, you know, this is still, you know, the United States of America, and people are afraid, and people are, you don't have the hoarding. It seems you can go to the store here and it seemingly get what you need for the most part. But we're more than 2,000 miles from the epicenter of this. So that's that.
This is an interesting concept. What I noticed, and you grew up in Chicago and I grew up right outside New York City. These are vertical cities. Washington is not. It's not a vertical city. I live inside the district line, and I live in what is, you know, a fairly leafy neighborhood. I mean, there are no apartment houses real close to me or anything like that. There's no particular verticality. And I always noticed that when I came to Washington for the first time to work at the Washington Post. And I just, you know, I used to have that quizzical stare when I looked around and I go, I'm not used to this city. This does not look like a city to me. Did you have that same sense when you first got here?
No, because Chicago's not as vertical as New York. And you had, like, we lived in a house in a neighborhood. My neighborhood was leafy that I grew up in. So Chicago's different. As we know, there's no place not in America like New York. But Tony, it is Chicago. Sort of, it's a great. It's like a combination of the two. There are different areas and parkland and stuff like that, and it is very vertical. And people, when I read people talk about the next hot spots, you know, Washington and Chicago are two of the places that are often listed in that.
Yeah, that's not what I'm looking for, but you know, I'm here, and I can't go to Delaware and ride it out. I mean, you're not even allowed. This is a remarkable thing. You're told, I know you have a second home here, and I know you pay taxes here, but don't come. Please don't come. Well, yeah, thank you. Maybe you won't cash the next tax check.
That's a wow. An admission that, you know, we're not ready to the point where we don't want you. And that's a hard thing to hear right now when people are in, it's dire. It's already dire.
Let's move on, and we won't dwell on this, and we'll talk about, and it's a sad thing, but I mean, Bobby Mitchell, who passed away, Bobby Mitchell was 84 years old. He was, for people in Washington, a very heroic figure and a very close friend to your family. I was trying to do the math today. You pretty much have to be almost 65 and up, either my age or Cindy Boren's age. You have to be that old to have watched Bobby Mitchell play and have a sense of what he did. I mean, I'm barely in there. And you know, I mean, I understand it was a teammate of Jim Brown's, and Jim Brown was a tremendous hero to me. So, yes, I have a sense of it. But boy, oh boy, to tell people what Bobby Mitchell did as a player, you know, it's almost impossible to tell them. They don't get it, right?
Well, nobody gets anything about history anymore. I mean, you know, people under 50 have no interest in it. And yes, I'm generalizing it. I don't care. They're not interested in anything that happened before this morning, so they don't care about anybody who did something that long ago. And I do. Bobby Mitchell's someone who, while he did not grow up, he grew up in Arkansas. He went to school at the University of Illinois.
That's right.
And he went to, you know, Bobby Mitchell and Dick Butkus and Ray Nitschke are still the most famous names at the University of, well, Red Grange, at the University of Illinois. And when I got to Washington and I started covering the Redskins, writing columns on the Redskins, you know, Bobby Mitchell was the assistant general manager.
That's right.
And I knew that. I mean, I knew of his history. I knew he was the first black Redskin, at least the first person to sign. I think there were three men who actually played that first game together in 1963. And I knew who Bobby Mitchell was. I knew what he'd done. I knew he was with Jim Brown first. I knew those things. And then, Tony, 20 years into my, well, yeah, close to it, into my life in Washington, I date and then marry someone who calls Bobby Mitchell Uncle Bobby.
Yeah.
That's how close the family I married into is to Bobby Mitchell. Bobby Mitchell and my father-in-law have been besties for decades. And so all of a sudden, it was sort of weird and awkward at first. I am, you know, covering Bobby Mitchell, and then again, he is Uncle Bobby in the house that I'm living in. And I got to know him. I got, because of my father-in-law early on, I played golf with him. I mean, we talked, we sat, we ate, he's one of the just most tremendous people I've ever met. And, you know, the great Mo Siegel told me this story one night about going to Bob, he was doing a column for the Washington Star, and the night before Bobby Mitchell was to play his first game with the Redskins, having essentially been ordered by Robert Kennedy, Bobby Kennedy basically said to George Preston Marshall, "You will have black players this season coming, or we will put you out of the stadium that is paid for with taxpayer money, many of them black, in the District of Columbia." That's what's going to happen here. And so Bobby Mitchell is with Mo Siegel at dinner on Connecticut Avenue, Tony, and it might have been Joe and Mo's. And a guy comes over. He interrupts Mo and Bobby having dinner Saturday night before Sunday game. And he said, excuse me, are you that new Redskin Bobby Mitchell? And Bobby says, yes. And as he extends his hand, so does Mo Siegel. They stand up, and the guy spits on Bobby's shoe. Now, you know
welcome to town. Like, yeah, yeah.
You know stories like this, but you don't think you know people that this happened to. And again, Mo Siegel telling me this story, you know, when I'm in my, I don't know, late 20s.
That's probably, probably not Joe and Mo's. It's probably Duke's. They probably went to Duke's.
Maybe it was Duke's.
Yeah, yeah.
And Tony, you know, I got to know Bobby. And, you know, people don't want to think of Washington. It's always unbelievable to me that Washingtonians will say stuff like, yeah, I don't want to cross the bridge and go to Virginia. I don't want to live over there. That's the South. Washington, D.C. could be an awful place for a black person. Bobby Mitchell faced real bad stuff that he had to deal with, he and his family. And I know his family. And I heard today for Gwen, his wife, just a wonderful person, one of my mother-in-law's very best friends. And Bobby was not bitter. There are people who can't stand that, and they get out of it, or they say, I got to be traded out of here. Even then, there were limited options for somebody then with contracts and the culture of sport the way it was. But Bobby Mitchell faced bad stuff in metropolitan D.C. I know of it. I know the stories. And he was just a wonderful man. And, one of the places where he faced bad stuff was the Washington Redskins, because he should have been the general manager. And he should have been the general manager in the 1980s. And he wasn't. And he was denied the chance. So I have never been a Redskin fan ever. And that's because I didn't grow up there, so it doesn't matter. But part of it is I know stuff that wasn't discussed in the 90s and the aughts and now. And Bobby, yes, was greatly accepted there. He is a hero to people like Daryl Green and Doug Williams and Joe Theismann, you know, a hero to them. And I know how much Sonny Jurgensen loves Bobby Mitchell. And Sonny would hurt. I've seen tears in Sonny's eyes when Bobby Mitchell was passed over for stuff. And this is stuff people don't want to talk about. They considered a long time ago. They could say, oh, not here. Not Washington. Yeah, Washington.
So it's interesting that Shirley Povich, the great Shirley Povich, crusaded for much of his life to have a certain equality on playing fields. And Shirley got disgusted in the 60s. I think the line was somewhere in the early 60s where he talked about the fact that so-and-so, and it may have been Jim Brown, it may have been Bobby Mitchell, or it may have been someone else. I don't know who exactly he was referring to. But he talked about the fact that so-and-so integrated the end zone four times yesterday.
You know, was banned from the press box from attending for doing it for that. A while.
See, and that's interesting because the press box is now named for who, Wilbon? Who's it named for?
Shirley Povich.
Shirley Povich. Yeah. So,
yeah.
You know, there's history. There's history. History is undeniable, and history needs to be studied. And as you say, people today, they don't. History for them is last week.
It is last week, and so Bobby Mitchell, just an unbelievably dignified, gentle soul. Obviously, he was a great football player. Tony, Bobby Mitchell had games that were insane. Bobby Mitchell had games. Look up his first games for the Redskins, where he'd have like a rushing touchdown, a receiving touchdown, and a 90-yard return.
Yeah,
I mean he had unbelievable games. He was playing for people he knew in large part, Tony, did not know him.
He's a great, great player. And much like the players who played against Michael Jordan in the main, having played for Bobby Mitchell with Jim Brown, Jim Brown's the greatest. So it doesn't matter how good you are. It doesn't.
Yeah.
Jim Brown's the greatest. You're in the shadow of Jim Brown.
It's unbelievable that they could trade for him. And that football in certain quarters thought it needed. And then, and again, one of the things is just incredible sitting around just listening to Uncle Bobby was him talking about his friendship with Robert Kennedy. And Robert Kennedy would come and just call him and say, I'm going to come pick you up. And if they needed to talk, they weren't sure what was going on with the phones in 1963, 4, 5. He would come by and pick up Bobby Mitchell at his house, and they would drive and talk. Unbelievable.
That's wonderful. It's a wonderful story. Bobby Mitchell, a great man, 84 years old. All right, I'll talk to you later from the attic, okay?
All right, Tone, sounds good.
Michael Wilbon, boys and girls, we will take a break. Jonathan Carl, who's the ABC News White House correspondent, or one of, is going to join us when we return. He's got a new book out called Front Row at the Trump Show, and we'll talk about that. We'll just depart a little bit from the norm here. I am Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Simply Safe ad. Sean and Nigel, I'm popping. My mic is popping. Does that mean that it goes out like that, or are we able to take the pop out?
No, you're fine on this end. It's just
wonderful. That's great. This is a Simply Safe ad. With all the uncertainty in the world, feeling safe at home has never been more important. It's why we talk about Simply Safe home security. Simply Safe has made it easy to finally get comprehensive protection for your home. There's no technician or salesperson that needs to come and disrupt your house. You don't need to pay any outrageous monthly fees to sign a two-year, or you don't have to sign any contracts. There's no two-year contracts. You just order online. You set it up yourself in under an hour. And by yourself, they don't mean me, because I can't do that. I'd bring someone in to do it. But most people are competent enough to do this. And your home is protected 24/7 with emergency dispatch for break-ins, fire, and more. And it's all for just 50 cents a day. And we are not the only fans of Simply Safe. U.S. News and World Report named Simply Safe, quote, the best overall home security of 2020. So right now, when you head to simplysafe.com/Tony, listeners to the Side Quality Podcast will get free shipping and a 60-day risk-free trial. That is Simply Safe. Let me spell it S-I-M-P-L-I. Simplysafe.com/Tony to make sure that they know. See, they will, because you're using Tony. It's the only code that we've got. And use the code, people. Simply Safe. Wishing you safety and good health.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Old Guy Radio for the Day is a song from, I think, the best rock and roll movie ever, That Thing You Do. Tom Hanks is all over this thing. Just a wonderful, wonderful movie. The Oneiders from Erie, Pennsylvania, of course. Nigel, why are we have a sad reason for playing this, even though it's such a good upbeat song.
Yeah, we do love this song and we do love this movie, but this is Melancholy Happy Trails to Adam Schlesinger, the musician. He was mostly known as the bassist for the group Fountains of Wayne, but in the early goings of that band, he wrote this song sort of as a personal exercise. He said didn't think it would be selected by the producers to be in the movie, but lo and behold, it was. So he was actually one of the backup singers for this song.
Are the people who sing this song, are they the actors, or are the actors just sort of lip syncing to this?
The actors are lip syncing to it. It was a bloke by the name of Mike Viola. I don't think he's any relation to Frank Viola, who was in a band.
String music. Frank Viola, great left-handed pitcher.
Yeah, exactly.
Born on Long Island, by the way. Long Island boy. Frank Viola.
Mike Viola and Adam Schlesinger were singing on this one for him.
Tremendous.
And Adam sadly passed away last week because of the coronavirus.
Yeah. So we bring in Jonathan Carl, and he is one of the White House correspondents, the lead White House correspondent for ABC News, and works in the same building that I work in, except that I now work in my attic. So I should ask you this. He's written a book called Front Row at the Trump Show, and we will talk a lot about that. But how is your work? Is the ABC News building open? Does it have a lot of activity? How is your physical work now, John?
Well, the ABC News Washington Bureau is open, but it is a ghost town. And, you know, I'm spending a good chunk of my time at home. I've got a little makeshift studio here in my office that consists of an iPhone on a tripod and a light and an old flip phone that I use to get my my IFB, my earpiece. But when I go into the bureau, it is skeletal. There is basically nobody in there except for, you know, security guard and, you know, somebody manning the news desk.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I haven't been in weeks, and there's no point. I now have a camera in the attic of my house, and there's no point in me doing it. I don't know about you, but I assume that the life of a political writer is not altogether dissimilar from the life of a sports writer, and you travel in packs, and you have friends, and you crave the collegiality, and I miss that so much, and I wonder if you do.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's with your, because we do travel in packs, you spend a lot of time with your competitors, so, you know, I've travel all over the world, all over the country with my colleagues from NBC and CBS, CNN, New York Times, you know, the Associated Press, all those people. These are my great friends. We've experienced, some incredible things together. We compete like hell against each other, but we're really good friends. Now I do, Tony, go to the White House still, although I am trying to spend as little time as possible there. It's a strange experience because the president is having his daily press conferences. I go into the White House. They take your temperature before you get into the White House grounds. They take your temperature again before you walk into the briefing room. Which is great. I find out whether or not I have a fever. It doesn't tell me a damn thing about whether or not me or any of my colleagues have coronavirus, but it's an odd experience because you really just don't know, you know, how safe the place is.
Well, let me get to that. And again, John's book is called Front Row at the Trump Show, which is a really good title. I really like the title. I have noticed in some of these briefings, and I've read about it as well, that the press corps seems to be thinning out. And I wondered, are they thinning out because of the fear of a particular illness, or are they thinning out because they have this sense that this is the same every single day? I don't particularly think it's truthful, and I'm not going to be here.
Well, it's more the former. I am also the president of the White House Correspondents Association, which means that what I have had to try to do is find a way for the White House press corps to continue to cover this story, but to do it in a way that ensures that we're not all killing ourselves and that we can continue to cover the story. So we have actually taken some absolutely unprecedented steps. The White House press room, which is you've been over there. I mean, it's a small room. But it is, there are 49 seats, and usually if you're there for a press briefing, God, especially one that includes the president, and especially this president, it is, every seat is taken, and then you have people jammed in the aisles, jammed in the back. It's one of the most crowded places you can imagine. So we have had to take steps to say to our colleagues and to ourselves, don't come unless you absolutely have to come, and we are now limiting the number of people who are allowed to come into that room during a briefing to 14 reporters.
Oh.
So we only have two people in each one of those rows, and we all take turns. And you know, even like the big networks, we're not in there every day, and we take turns. Now, you know, the briefings, we can get into the substance. There are certainly some huge issues there. But people are staying away as much as they can, and some major news organizations have decided this a couple weeks ago simply not to come anymore because they thought it was an unnecessary risk.
So, you know, you're covering the president of the United States, and you can't. You know, you're not allowed to. It's that conditions are terrible, and you know, in a lot of ways, if you spend all this time with the president of the United States, you are violating social distancing to a degree. You know, you're being surrounded.
But think about this: this is for most of us the biggest story of our lives.
Sure, sure.
And to not be able to go there and cover it, and you're right. You look up at the podium, and you see, I mean, they've gotten a little better at this because we're now, we sit so far apart, we're 6 feet apart. I mean, you know, it's we're pretty much in compliance. We're not totally in compliance because the CDC says no gatherings of more than 10 people are recommended, so we have more than that. But we're pretty much in compliance. But up at the podium, the president's all jammed in there with arguably the most important people in the country right now, the ones heading the task force. They're like shoulder to shoulder.
It's the oddest thing in my life. I look at that and I think, well, here's Anthony Fauci, in whom I have complete trust. And he's being flanked by two people, and I'm thinking, you shouldn't probably be that close. It's like the supermarkets, there are supermarkets that say if you're my age, if you're 70 and up, you can go there at a certain time and you can get all the food that you want, except that they line you up. Well, I don't want to be in that line, you know?
Nope.
I just think that's insane. I think it's counterproductive. Anyway, the book, I should ask this because I've written books. Well, I haven't written books. I've collected stuff in my life. I don't actually write. That would be too much to ask. But yours is written, front row at the Trump Show. And there's a schedule, the way things are written and the way things are published and the way things come out. And you, all of these things were set long before there was any notion of a pandemic. And I'm sort of wondering, is it a good time for a book to come out or a bad time for a book to come out?
I mean, I knew that my book's release date would be March 31st a year ago.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I had no idea that this would be happening.
Yeah,
it is a really strange time to be out with a book, and I think this book is the most important work of my professional life. I mean, I really put everything into it, and you know, I'm proud of it. I want to get out and I want to talk about it. I had scheduled all kinds of events to get out with people and you know and sign books, talk to people, answer questions.
Got to sell it, baby. That's what you do. You got to.
Yep. Yeah. And I was really passionately looking forward to it. And let me tell you, we had one hell of a book party planned, too, in Washington. And all that stuff's canceled. And it's, you know, I've done a lot of virtual events, and I've learned a lot about things like Crowdcast and Zoom and Instagram lives and all that stuff that I never really had dealt with before, and that's been interesting. But it's such a strange thing, and all the bookstores are closed. You know, Barnes and Nobles, you can order and do curbside pickup, but by and large, you know, every bookstore in the country is closed, and it's been bizarre. And then there's the question of the story itself. I mean, I wrote this. There was a review. The Guardian did a review of my book yesterday, and they called it a pre-pandemic warning. And I think there's something to that. It oddly, my book, which tells the story first and foremost of my experience covering this bizarre, you know, thing that the country has gone through over the past 5 years, from a very unique vantage point as somebody who has known Donald Trump for 26 years and now is right there in the middle of it all. But in some ways, it feels more relevant than ever because it you see all the themes that I go through in the book played out in vivid color, almost to a cartoonish extreme. Every day in the way he's handled this crisis. If my book had come out, landed in the middle of the impeachment trial, you know, it would have felt a little bit off because I didn't spend hardly any time at all on that stuff. You know, I mean, I didn't get into the Ukraine. I mean, a little bit, but not much. But I got into how Trump operates, his relationship with the truth, the way the people around him try to steer him or not steer him, his management style or lack of a management style. And all of it is playing out right as we see in this crisis.
It's so interesting. We all, when you write a book, I've said this a million times, in the main, your book editor doesn't really help you edit the book. He's there or she's there to sign you up and encourage you and give you an advance and pat you on the head a lot. But the editing, it's always self-editing, or you bring in somebody who's a good friend and you say, please don't spare me. Just make sure it's as good as it can be. And then the great moments are the book parties or the signings or the interviews. I mean, they're great. They're great fun, even if you think they're hard to do. And if you think they're hard to do, you're a fool, because this is the greatest fun in the world. And you produce, as you say, you produce the most important work of your life. And, you know, you don't have that. I mean, I feel as somebody who's going through this, I had the good. I didn't have the bad. And so I feel badly that you miss out on that and you sort of have to scramble to do it another way just to get the word out.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, first of all, it's hard to even feel a little bit sorry for myself when you see the pain that people are going through.
Oh, so yeah, sure.
It's nothing. But I have to tell you, this was this I was preparing for this and done all this. And the other thing is, I was planning the White House Correspondents' Dinner, which
I wanted to ask about that. I got a table for ESPN. I got us a table. And now it's and you were going to have comedians. We were going to almost go back to the way it was, right?
I mean, I had Kenan Thompson of SNL lined up to host this thing. And I was working with him. He's such a great guy. Oh my God, he's such a great guy. I was working with him and a couple of writers he brought in. We were redoing the whole dinner. I mean, I had planned that this is going to be a White House Correspondents' Dinner unlike any you had seen before. I'd ripped up the set. I brought in a producer. We were going to really do this thing right. And by the way, I'll give you a little bit of a scoop. I am going to announce soon that we are going to reschedule, God willing, if this scourge passes. We are going to reschedule for late August, and I'll have an announcement, I hope, within the coming week on the White House Correspondents' Dinner. But, you know, but to have those two things, these were like two of the biggest things I'd ever been a part of.
That's
boom, gone.
All right. Well, John, thank you so much for being on the podcast. We reach people who are smart, and they have money, and maybe they'll buy the book. It's front row at the Trump Show. Thank you, John.
Well, thank you. And I have to say, my old friend Doug Adams, former neighbor, I wasn't going to take anything seriously about this book until I appeared on your podcast. So,
oh, good.
So I'm glad we pulled this off. And the book is available. It is the good thing is people have a little more time to read. And Amazon, it went to number one overall on Amazon, and then they promptly sold out, and they're out of stock right now.
Tremendous! Congratulations.
But you can still get the book online from Barnes & Noble and from a whole bunch of other independent bookstores. And Amazon, they tell me, if you place an order, they're going to have books within a week or two.
Quicker than we get tests and masks, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, John. John Carl, boys and girls, we will take a break. We will come back. We'll do email and jingle and stuff like that. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This podcast today, this episode of the podcast, is brought to you by another podcast called Go and See, hosted by Malcolm Gladwell, who was a colleague of mine at the Post a long time ago, and then he went on to greatness, and I went on to sitting in my attic and doing television shows. Produced by the team behind Revisionist History, Go and See is a six-part series focused on Lexis and the philosophy of Genchi Genbutsu, which means go and see for yourself, an idea that stems from the belief that if you experience something yourself, you have a better understanding of people and how to create something for them. In the series, Lexis invites Gladwell to Japan to discover their unconventional thinking and processes firsthand. Find out how a Japanese tea ceremony influenced the engineering of a car window, how the sound of an engine is tuned like a musical composition to elicit certain emotions, how understanding samurai warriors' eyes led to a suspension innovation. This is all cool stuff, and Gladwell is very good at explaining this. Gladwell learns that no detail is left behind and that a car company can learn more about cars by actually studying people. Go inside Lexus's headquarters in Japan, ride along on a top-secret test track with a master driver, and sit in the expertly designed seat that actually lowers to welcome you into the vehicle. Follow Gladwell on his journey wherever you like to listen. It's all out. It's all available to you, podcast form. Visit Lexus.com/curiosity for more stories like these.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
I've got bonus points on my Amex card. I want to spend those points, not cash for a gift card. I want to speak to someone with clout and sway. Get me the CEO and get him right away. Yeah, what's that you say? No calls, email is the way.
Steve Lipton doing the vocal from Springfield, Virginia. John Moransky doing the lyrics. Everyone apologizes to the Temptations. This feels, right, Nigel, like 8 years ago. My problems with Amex and trying to get gift cards for people. Feels like it, just a million miles away. It does.
Right. It was only like 2 weeks ago, right?
Yeah, 2-3 weeks ago. Great song. Appreciate that very much. That's it for today. Before we get to the mailbag, let me remind you that mime is money. That was terrible. I read that so badly. Thanks to our guests today, The Athletic's David Aldridge, Michael Wilbon, and ABC's John Carlin, his book Front Row at the Trump Show. It's available wherever you can buy books, as he said. Thanks as well to our sponsors, Policy Genius, Simply Safe, and the new podcast, Go and See, hosted by Malcolm Gladwell. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Radio.com. If you get the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. Shout out on my part to Curry Kirkpatrick and Stephen Pearsall, who are listening. I appreciate that. We got a million email. I'm happy about that.
Oh,
What?
I was going to say, before we get to the emails, can I also say thanks to Danny and the gang from Bethesda Bagels.
Sure.
Providing us with bagels again. 4819 Bethesda Avenue, open from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m.
McManus thinks that everybody, all the little, should send us, you know, what they're doing, what they're eating, what they're cooking, what they're eating. From Mark Feiner in Greenwich, Connecticut. You think you're feeling claustrophobic? How's this for perspective? In the summer of 1926, whooping cough landed Ernest Hemingway quarantined in a two-bedroom house with his three-year-old son, his wife, and his mistress. Every afternoon, the Fitzgeralds and the Murphys would sit in their cars outside the house and drink while the Hemingways plus one drank from the porch, social distancing, lost generation style. From Steve the Sycophant, congratulations, dear Toby, your masterpiece, I'm Back for More Cash, has inched its way up to 32,721st on Amazon sales list. I strongly suggest you have the camera person in your attic for PTI focus less on you and more on the enlarged cover of the book. The top 10,000 is possibly within reach. From Bill Pitcher in Quarryville, Pennsylvania, with little else to do, I've been amusing myself with your old podcast going back about 3 years. Will Ollie the Bobcat make it home safe? When will you leave the undisclosed third floor location? What will the new restaurant be called? How on earth did Mr. Tony sleep through the Patriots' comeback from 28-3? What a strange new world we live in now. From Peter Jennings, not that Peter Jennings. Thank you for continuing to do the show. We're supposed to work from home. Ugh. Nothing on the Golf Channel, et cetera, et cetera. Finding your newest podcast makes a huge positive difference in the day here. The Japanese government has just issued a travel ban for any person who's been in the U.S. in the last 14 days. I guess we're not playing Tokyo Golf Club next weekend, but don't give up hope. Tokyo 2020 is now same date in 2021, making preparations for your arrival. You won't need the Lilyhammer coat. It's going to be hot. It's very, very nice of him. Kaylee, who says, thank you for playing Layla for Old Guy Radio last week. My car in college was also named for that song because it was the first song that played on the radio when I drove it. Also, I love a pun. So the Chevrolet Layla Malibu was an obvious name choice. Quarantine has been a challenge, but your podcast really has helped to continue some variation of my routine. Thanks from a millennial in Phoenix. Matt Zabrowski of Brother Josephus. Hey, Mr. Tony, you mentioned you would like to hear stories from littles and their experiences during these wicked times. One beautiful thing right now is that every evening at 7 p.m., New Yorkers stick our heads out of our apartments and cheer for the health workers. They notice, too. My friend David, a nurse, told me he saw everyone cheering when he found out what it was for. He was extremely moved. They all need our support right now. Thanks for playing the song. It made the band really happy. And by the way, your piece on Trump's Sunday speech was really, really good. New York is paying attention, and that's directed to Saliza. That's nice. David Sampson in Westport, Connecticut. Listening to Michael talk about the Mel Stottlemyre glove elicited all sorts of wonderful memories for me. Thinking about playing catch with my dad, my son, and now my granddaughter using the gloves I still have. My Hutch Richie Ashburn, my Rawlings Mickey Mantle. The Ashburn's actually signed by Virgil Trucks. When the bullpen at the stadium was, that's great. Between the bleachers and the stands, he had me throw it down, signed it, and threw it back. This is a time to recall the great speech by James Earl Jones and think how baseball really does link us all together, even as we are separated during this difficult times. I'm looking at some stubs I have, one from Yankee Stadium when the price for reserve seat was $2.75, one from my son's first game at Shea in 1983, my favorite game ever, the July 9th, 1969 imperfect game by Tom Seaver, the only time anyone will remember the name Jimmy Qualls. I remember. And my 1964 All-Star Game program and so much more brings a smile to my face and even tears to my eyes. Baseball, Ray. Baseball. It will get us through this and a lot more. Thanks for the shows during this difficult time. From Marlene Salisbury in Olney, Maryland. We hope you are all well. Thanks so much for continuing your podcast. Just the sound of your voice makes us little feel a bit more normal during this unsettling time. We're hoping you can send a big birthday shout out to our fabulous mom, Dot Salisbury of Olney, Maryland. She was 95 years young on April 2nd. The special lady has 13 children and 32 grandchildren. She was an original sports mom and to this day is an avid Miami Dolphins fan. Mom is the best and so loved. You take care, Tony. And from Jim Flynn in Colebrook, Connecticut. And I'm telling you, we got 100 emails. We'll never get to them. And we keep doing these shows just through emails. Jim Flynn, Colebrook, Connecticut. Tony, you can stop saying I'm not that kind of a doctor. Face it, we know you're not any kind of a doctor. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
I'm a man. I'm 40. I'm not a kid.
What you gonna do? Hey, what you gonna do? What you gonna do till the quarantine is through? What you gonna do? What you gonna do? What you gonna do till the quarantine is through? Maybe we'll get real good at organizing socks. All our paper clips be placed in a special box. Listen to the works of Woody, Bob, and Bruce. Read your old comic books, catch up on Marcel Proust. Maybe we'll get real good at recognizing dust. See if Coca-Cola can really cure rust. Maybe we'll get pro at polishing the sink. Maybe we'll be experts at tiddlywinks. Maybe we'll paint pictures like Van Gogh or Matisse. Maybe we'll get good at imitating geese. We'll walk and we'll walk and we'll shriek to wake the dead. And we'll be world class at making our bed. What you gonna do? What you gonna do? What you gonna do till the quarantine is through? What you gonna do? What you gonna do? What you gonna do till the quarantine is through? Hey! Maybe we'll learn glockenspiel, maybe we'll bake pies. Maybe we'll do exercise to tighten up our thighs. Maybe we'll write symphonies, bold and anthemic, in D major. D major's good for a pandemic. Maybe we'll write theses for master's degrees. Something scientific like, how do ice cubes freeze? Maybe we'll learn party tricks like in the deep south, flipping peanuts from your finger to your mouth. Maybe we'll eat beans and emit noxious gases. Maybe we'll start taking a bunch of online classes. Maybe we'll drink lemonade every day at 5 and listen to the folk singers on the Facebook Live. What you gonna do? What you gonna do? What you gonna do till the quarantine is through? What you gonna do? What you gonna do? What you gonna do till the quarantine is through?